Welcome back to part two of We Love Movies with me, Gordon Hayden. Andy McCarroll, he's still with me. We're going to talk all things Justice League now because the new trailer dropped this week. Here's a little bit from it.
We have to be ready. You, me, the others. There's an attack coming from far away.
Not coming, Bruce. It's already here.
Andy, the new trailer to Justice League, I've got to be honest with you, it doesn't seem like any of the problems from Batman vs. Superman seem to have been fixed. The same aesthetic is there. It looks very computery at times. And they also announced that the running time is over 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it kind of seems to be suffering from the same problems that Batman vs. Superman had. It looks like a cutscene from a video game. It looks very much like Sin City, where the world doesn't look real, which worked for a film like Sin City because that was kind of the aesthetic they were going for. But it just doesn't look real in any sense. There were like, you know, all the backdrops, you know, the effects, they all just look CGI. There's no weight to anything. There's no realism to it. And this was like most of the major criticisms from Batman versus Superman was just that. And we were told, oh no, this is going to be totally different. We've brought the humor, we've listened to fans. And based on, I know it's a trailer, you can only judge so much, but it seems to cover quite a large portion of the film. So it doesn't look like they've addressed those things. And I really think that if they hadn't had Zack Snyder locked in and ready to go for shooting Justice League, I think he would have been replaced and they would have went a different direction.
Yeah, that's very true. It was almost like the horse has bolted and there's nothing more we can do at this stage. Now, a big talking point amongst fans has been Superman. Now, obviously not giving too much away about what happens at the end of Batman versus Superman, but there's no sign of him in the trailer, Andy, and there's also no sign of the villain. Can you kind of get a grasp of what the plot is?
No, and to be honest, I think we discussed earlier the Spider-Man trailer, which gave away pretty much the whole film beat by beat. I like that they're holding off on things like that. Now, I've no doubt before the film's release, we're going to get a trailer that shows Superman, or it's going to show Steppenwolf, who's going to be the big bad in this one. But I like that they haven't kind of set out their stall and thrown everything up front. Everyone knows Superman is going to be in the film at some point. And I really like them to keep that moment of his return for the film, where you see it on the big screen rather than, you know, watching it on your phone or watching it on your laptop. I think that's a real huge cinematic moment, and I think they missed the boat on that with Batman versus Superman by showing, you know, glimpses of the fight beforehand. I think, you know, the Justice League coming together for the first time in a movie should be a really, you know, big reveal, you know, like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. You know, they didn't show that in the trailer. They need to have that big money shot that you could see, you know, in IMAX or on a big screen. And, you know, that's the whole point in going to a cinema to see a film like this, is to see these, you know, unbelievable moments that you've never seen before. And I think if they show it on a trailer beforehand, it's going to cheapen that and it's going to lose impact. And that's why people aren't blown away. Like, I think people would have enjoyed Batman versus Superman more if they'd gone in not having seen as much footage as they had.
It does seem they've cast it well, though, Andy. Look, we all know Ben Affleck, and he was one of the best things about Batman vs. Superman. And Gal Gadot, she's great as Wonder Woman. Hopefully her standalone film will do the business, even though there's talk behind the scenes that it's a bit of a mess. But Ezra Miller as The Flash, he looks great. And I'm a big fan of Jason Momoa. I think he's great. Actually, we were talking about who should play Snake Plissken. I'd throw his name into the hat.
That's a great shout, actually, as well. He has that charisma. He's very much, you know, you could see him in the Kurt Russell mode. He's that kind of badass rock star. You know, you wouldn't mess with him, but at the same time, you'd love to go for a pint with him. He's just, you know, he's the typical, you know, men want to be him, women want to be with him. He's just, you know, he's a bloke, like a proper bloke. And I think he's going to be the one that steals the film, just based on the trailer as well. He's kind of the, you know, the Tony Stark Hulk role. He's kind of in the middle there. He's the, you know, the lovable asshole.
Yeah, very much so. I can't wait to see what they're going to do. And bearing in mind, remember George Miller years ago, he tried to bring this up onto the big screen and it never happened because it was something to do, Andy, where with the tax break in Australia at the time with the film industry for foreign movies.
What happened was they were literally just about to start shooting and the Australian government pulled the tax incentives that we were getting. Now, George Miller is, you know, born and raised in Australia, and the film was getting a tax break because, you know, an Australian was directing it and it was being classed as an Australian film. They pulled that shortly before film, and so the budget skyrocketed by, you know, I think 50 or 60 million. Then you had the writer's strike in the middle of that, so they couldn't actually, you know, compensate by rewriting a couple of action scenes to, you know, budget for them. So the whole thing was literally the week shooting was about to start. They've all got their costume films. There's some concept art and there's a finished script. And the finished script is absolutely fantastic. It borrows from a comic book called Justice League Tower of Babel, where Batman, who'd been keeping files on, you know, all the weaknesses of the Justice League, his files get stolen and people start, you know, picking the Justice League off one by one. It's absolutely brilliant. Like, the script is fantastic and I'd love to see them incorporate elements of that into the new Justice League. It doesn't look like they're doing it. And I think it was a real missed opportunity, especially when you see Mad Max Fury Road and how absolutely insanely fantastic that was. I really would have liked to have seen what he could do with like a Justice League film.
Well, do you know what? George Miller, he's very much within the Warner Brothers family. So, and there was talk of him potentially making a DC movie. Maybe there are plans to finally make a Justice League movie with George Miller, because with Zack Snyder, is he going to be back for a second one? Who knows? It depends really how this one's going to do before major commitments are made. I think George Miller would be a great choice. Time is catching up with us though, Andy. Andy McCarroll, thank you so much for your time.
Cheers, thanks Gordon. We Love Movies with
Gordon Hayden. Now in We Love Movies, it is time to take a look at two more films playing in cinemas this weekend. The first of which is Ghost in the Shell, starring Scarlett Johansson. Rory and Brian will be here very shortly to review the film, but first let us hear from Scarlett Johansson. Here she is on We Love Movies, telling us on who Major is.
She is the head of a government-funded group, Section 9, that fight cyber terrorism, which she believes to be humanity's biggest threat. And through this journey of fighting terrorism, which is what she's tasked to do, she embarks on a path to self-discovery in a very unexpected way.
Here is Scarlett Johansson once again on We Love Movies, talking about working with director Rupert Sanders, a man who got himself into a lot of hot water on the set of Snow White and the Huntsman.
You know, Rupert is really a visionary, and when he sent me his, you know, all the packages of everything that he was putting together for this, you know, that's really what cinched the deal for me. It was like, wow, this guy has completely created not only in, you know, an homage to the manga, to the anime, for the fans, but has his own, you know, put his thumbprints all over this project, and really there's a kind of a new wave, cold wave kind of feeling to this film. It's not the future that we imagine to be kind of pristine and, you know, personalityless, you know, the digital age. It has nothing to do with that. It's almost as if we've, you know, humanity is kind of has engulfed itself and is sort of like the snake eating its tail, and the city is built upon city and people are made out of other people, and it's, you know, it's very much a I would say an indulgent idea of what the future could be.
You're listening to We Love Movies with me, Gordon Hayden. Rory Cashin and Brian Lloyd are here now to review Ghost in the Shell. Just before I introduce you two gents, we heard from Scarlett Johansson. They're talking about Rupert Sanders, the director. If anyone that needs a little bit of reminder, he was a little bit of a bold boy, wasn't he, Rory? Because he likes to get close to his leading ladies.
You're not bringing me down this dark alley of gossip. I'm not doing it. This is a movie show. If you want the gossip on how Rupert Sanders apparently had an affair with Kristen Stewart on the set of Snow White and Huntsman, you're not going to hear about it from me.
Well said, Rory. Okay, so let's talk about the plot to Ghost in the Shell. Brian, what's going on?
Scarlett Johansson plays a cyborg, a woman who has had her brain implanted into a synthetic body, and she now works for this, I suppose, anti-terrorist squad called Section 9. Hmm. The city that it's set in, it's not specifically stated, but we're led to believe that it's Tokyo in the future. And as she's tracking this terrorist called Kuze, who's played by Michael Carmen Pitt, he starts to reveal parts of her past that she has thought were real but turned out to be imaginary. And then there's a whole sort of revelation about who she really is and where she really came from.
All right, here's a little bit from the trailer to Ghost in the Shell.
I have been watching you. You have to remember.
I saw someone down there. He wasn't human.
He's a known terrorist, and he's killed again.
They didn't just kill them. They hacked into their minds.
He's everywhere. Nowhere.
I will find him. And I will kill him.
Little section there from the trailer to Ghost in the Shell. Rory, a lot of people are not happy about this film. It's causing a lot of controversy already. What is going on for people that don't know?
Why are you coming for me with all this gossip? Why does Brian get to talk all the hard movie news and I have to talk about the Heat magazine side of everything? Apparently, people are very... You're not going to hear about it from me, but apparently people are very upset that... Originally, the character was an Asian female and has been recast as a notoriously un-Asian Scarlett Johansson. So people are like, wouldn't this be a really good opportunity for Hollywood to put, you know, an Asian character front and center in a major blockbuster? No, because how is that going to make any money?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Really? Like,
and also, once you see the film, it kind of makes sense why Scarlett Johansson has been cast. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not going to obviously go down the plot road of spoilers, but it does make a little bit of sense why this is like the option that they chose.
Okay, so even the fact that they do themselves justice and explain the reason why Scarlett Johansson is cast. Brian, I'll bring you in on this here now.
Yeah.
Does it still work though? Because the Ghost in the Shell, the anime version, is highly regarded with manga fans.
Mm.
So to take on this property and to westernize it, and Rupert Sanders as a director, like, he's not somebody that'll go, ooh, there's a visionary at work. There's a bang of a journeyman off him. So does it come together well? Like, was it an exciting adaptation?
No, I mean, I don't think I could stand here and call it an exciting film because it's not terribly exciting. But I will say that, you know, it's funny, you say Rupert Sanders is a journeyman. I don't know if I agree with that or not. I do think that he is, I don't think he has a handle on how to direct actors, because that's the one thing as I was watching this film, it looked incredible. I mean, the visuals were fantastic. Production design was brilliant. The soundtrack from Clint Mansell was brilliant. It all looked great, but I don't think Rupert Sanders knows how to direct actors, because from scene to scene, Scarlett Johansson seemed to be acting in two completely different films. Like, one scene, she'd be like this really kind of almost like walking like a robot marching into an office. And then in the next scene, she's like trying to be kind of vulnerable with Pilo Asbeck and B. Takeshi as well. Like, she's trying to have these like kind of real emotional moments with them.
Yeah.
But then in the next scene, she's just like marching along and talking like a robot, and there's nothing behind the eyes.
Right.
And I think a lot of that is down to the fact that, again, like I say, Rupert Sanders, I don't think he knows how to direct actors. I think he can get the visuals right. But in terms of, you know, giving actors something to latch onto and to make sense of, I don't think he has it, you know?
Okay, well,
but I don't think it'll be remembered, no. I mean, it is pretty much a standard Hollywoodized version of something that was way more original.
Because for years I've been trying to get Akira made. I know Leonardo DiCaprio at one stage was attached to it.
Do you know who's attached now?
No.
Jordan Peele. Get out.
That's interesting, actually. Yeah. Wow. Now, Akira, I could see there being a greater sense of attraction for people to go to cinema because it's held in high regard. Whereas Ghost in the Shell, I don't know if there a lot of people know about it.
Well, I think it's one of those films that people maybe do know of, but almost definitely haven't seen. I hadn't seen it until maybe 6 weeks ago. And the film's barely 80 minutes long, and I sat there for 60 minutes having no clue what the hell was going on. Like, I was like, oh, yes, that's very impressive to look at, but seriously, what? For the entire film. And I wasn't alone, because I was there with a very intelligent person, and I know that person is listening and is agreeing with me, because when the film was over, too, I was like, what has happened?
Oh, no.
And this film does a good job of making sense of what is essentially complete nonsense
right
from the original one. And there's little kernels of very interesting ideas are scattered along, but it's so caught up in how it looks that, it, like, there's, ironically, no soul behind the very pretty exterior.
Oh, God. So, gents, the time has come for scores. Brian?
6 out of 10. I mean, I basically would call this, like, it's cyberpunk John Carter, in the sense that, like, if this was released 20 years ago, we wouldn't shut up about it. We would say it's so original and so kind of caught up in it and blah, 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 blah. But the fact that The Matrix kind of did a lot of the stuff already means that, well, it may look brilliant, there's not enough going on here to keep it anything more than just okay.
And Brian... Geez,
what is wrong with you?
I don't
Jesus
know why,
Christ.
I don't,
why are you
know,
in love with him?
I don't know. I'm so sorry. Rory, and you, I'm feeling... I don't know. I'm feeling a 5 from you. I don't know what it is.
I am also going to give it a 6.
Oh, that's that.
I thought it was amazing to look at. but it is the world's most expensive screensaver.
Yeah. So. That's good. Oh, well. That's really good.
Just before we go, we just have to give it a little bit of time. The Smurfs, the Lost Village. I keep saying city. I'm probably trying to be a bit loftier.
Your brain's trying to get rid of it.
Yeah. But Brian, you saw this.
I'm very blue, having not seen it.
Oh, he's on a roll, this fella.
Lol.
Is Gargamel in it?
Yeah.
Who plays Gargamel?
Rainn Wilson from The Office. Oh, I'll tell you, right.
The budget.
It's so clearly like C and D list actors, right? I'll give you a quick rundown. Rainn Wilson plays Gargamel. Demi Lovato plays Smurfette. Mandy Patinkin, who you'd know from Homeland, he's Papa Smurf.
Of course.
Now, the only one here who is any kind of, I would say, recognizable, and I'm using that term loosely, is Julia Roberts plays Mother Smurf, or Smurf Willow, I think was her name.
Did she just have a day off or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like the way that they actually recorded their lines, you'd know right well it was like, I'm doing one take, and if you don't get it, I'm out of here. So
probably sounds like Julia Roberts is over some sort of Skype call, really. You know
what I mean? Like, probably, yeah. I mean, like, it was really just one of those things where it's like, right, okay, we're doing this one take and one take only, and that's it. And there's nothing going on here.
Somebody be listening there going, ah, look, that's grand for you lads. I've got a young 4-year-old dying to see the Smurfs. Do you think, though, it'll play for the littlies?
Well, first of all, raise your child better, if that's the goal.
Yeah.
If that's the goal. If your child wants to see the Smurfs, the Lost Village, this is on you.
Oh, there you go. The gauntlet's been
thrown. But Brian, go ahead.
But no, what I would say, but genuinely, right, I mean, Smurfs might have been around, like, look, we're all in our 30s.
How dare you? Just announce my age on the air like that.
But hang on, right? I mean, look, the Smurfs was around when we were kids, right? And I can see what they're trying to do here. They're like, okay, well, you know, we should have kids. None of us have kids. Well, I know you have kids. What I'm saying is that it's the idea that they're trying to introduce the Smurfs to a new generation of kids, because those who have had kids and all that sort of thing. But, like, Smurfs, like, who cares about the Smurfs? Really?
Nobody.
They're trying to bring back the Monchichi as
The Trolls, yeah. Remember?
All that. Trolls, exactly. There's a good point. The
Trolls made a lot of money.
Yes, the recognition factor there. You know what Hollywood's like? Trying to bring back the Ghostbusters.
You know why the Trolls
disaster.
Made a lot of money? Because they had a song.
Oh, that Justin Timberlake one. Why would you cast him? Get him for the music, but he has the most horrendous squeaky voice. Like, why would you have Justin Timberlake in it?
Just as an actor, generally.
No.
Not appealing.
It's awful.
That's, I really feel like we spun out there. Sorry, Brian, what would you give?
No.
The Lost City of Gold.
I tell you what, I would absolutely watch a film made on the mysterious cities of gold.
No, we're really spinning
out. We need to get a
score. Out of 10.
Oh, pff, I don't know, 4.
4 out of 10 for the Smurfs, the Lost
Smurfing
Village.
Bad.
Keep saying city, the Lost Village. Gentlemen, that is it. Thank you very much for coming on this week's
what's
show.
What's next week? I think it's, is it Boss Baby?
No, it's Going in Style.
Michael Caine is in it.
And Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Is that the one where they're just all old men stealing things?
Yeah.
So they're in it, and there's another, what's the
Ocean's 111.
Oh, and Raw. Is it this cannibal movie?
The French cannibal one, which I've heard people are passing out watching.
I cannot wait for
that. Can't wait for that.
That's going to be great. So that's all on next week's show. Rory and Brian, thank you so much. Much appreciated. We Love Movies returns next Sunday. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll chat to you next week.